Radio Prague News.
Czech diplomats negotiate the release of German humanitarian workers in Syria. A new study shows 10% of vehicles in Prague are responsible for two-thirds of the air pollution, and tax authorities are set to impose hefty fines on Airbnb hosts who haven't paid their taxes. Acting Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs Jan Hamáček arrived in Damascus on Thursday to take over and return home two people working for a German humanitarian organization who had been held by the Syrian government. The Czech Republic is currently the only EU country with an ambassador in Syria. During a meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Mr. Hamáček strongly condemned the use of chemical weapons and stressed that perpetrators must be brought to justice. A study commissioned by Prague City Hall on traffic and air pollution has found that more than two-thirds of gaseous pollutants are generated by just 10% of the vehicles operating in the Czech capital. Many of these vehicles have missing or faulty exhaust systems or simply diesel engines in poor condition, the study found. The city is now looking at ways to improve Prague's air quality, which could include introducing a congestion tax. The U.S. Department of Energy plans to move its regional European office from the Bulgarian capital of Sofia to Prague. The decision reportedly was influenced by Westinghouse's interest in building new nuclear blocks in the Czech Republic and the growing influence of Russia and China in Central Europe. The U.S. Embassy in Prague did not comment on the reasons behind the move, beyond saying in a statement that the regional European office works to promote energy security, non-proliferation, scientific cooperation, and American commercial interests. The General Directorate of Finance says it has records of the untaxed revenue of Czech Airbnb hosts dating back to 2015 and will soon begin collecting back payments. The tax authority also plans to impose penalties of up to 40%. In Prague, Airbnb hosts may also owe fees to the municipality, and failing to register for local taxes could warrant a penalty of up to €500,000. Consumer price inflation, or CPI, slowed to 2.3% in July. Compared to a year ago, housing and fuel prices in particular showed significant growth, the Czech Statistical Office said. And finally, the weather. Rain is expected throughout most of the Czech Republic on Friday, with powerful thunderstorms likely in the Zlín region. In central Bohemia, daytime temperatures should reach 26 degrees Celsius, while in Moravia, they may top out at 34 degrees. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, a storm is brewing over plans to cut state funds to NGOs. The ongoing heat wave has forced Czech farmers to slaughter their livestock early. And a bit later, we learn from a U.S.-based marionette master how puppets can be better actors than people. All that is coming up shortly, so please do stay with us. A storm is brewing in the Czech government over financial support to NGOs. The Prime Minister's ANO party wants to cut state support for NGOs by some 3 billion crowns, while its junior coalition partner, the Social Democrats, are vehemently against the plan. The debate is now focused on which NGOs should have their state support slashed. Daniela Lazarova has the details.
There are currently close to 130,000 NGOs registered in the Czech Republic, which the state provides with approximately 14 billion crowns in financial support. And in recent months, NGOs have increasingly been a target of criticism, from President Miloš Zeman, who often takes a swipe at environmental NGOs, the Freedom and Direct Democracy Party, the Communist Party, and to some extent the Civic Democrats. Now Prime Minister Babiš's ANO party has said it plans to cut the state support for these organizations by 3 billion crowns and has commissioned an analysis of their activities and expenditures in order to figure out where money can be saved. Social Democrat MP Alena Gajdušková says this is not a good idea.
Trying to save money on NGOs and civic activities is very imprudent, both from the social and economic viewpoint. The NGO sector engages 29% of the population, that's 2 million people. I agree that we need to check up on how the money is used, but to cut funds in an area where people are volunteering or working for relatively small pay to cover areas in which the state does not do enough is neither wise nor good.
The finance ministry has already said it does not want to slash support going to NGOs that are engaged in helping handicapped people, seniors and socially weaker groups of the population. The prime minister has said he would not be in favour of slashing state support for sporting activities. So who should lose out? Lubomir Volný of the Freedom and Direct Democracy Party has a clear idea.
We differentiate between publicly beneficial NGOs engaged in supporting sporting activities, culture, helping seniors and so on, and NGOs with a political agenda. Take the NGO People in Need, which goes to schools to brainwash our children. It lectures on the subject of real news and fake news. But who gave them the right to judge? So while we do not support blanket cuts and finances for NGOs, we do think the money should be taken from political NGOs and used for the benefit of the public elsewhere.
Social Democrat MP Alena Gajdušková begs to disagree.
The NGO People in Need is doing a great job, particularly abroad, helping where help is most needed. Its activity helps alleviate problems in the world's hotspots, and in view of the migrant crisis, I am surprised my colleague does not recognize its importance. As for the media education in schools, that is better off in the hands of an NGO than in state hands. We are a democratic country, and I hope we stay that way.
MP Alena Gajdušková, ending that report by Daniela Lazarova. Now, the ongoing hot and dry weather that continues to grip most parts of Europe is forcing Czech farmers to slaughter their cows early, as they have no hay left to feed them. With grass turning brown and brittle, cows have very little to eat, and livestock breeders are forced to break into their winter reserves much earlier than usual. Ruth Frankova has the details.
The Czech Republic, like the rest of Europe, is currently experiencing a period of extreme heat, which, according to weather forecasts, is unlikely to end soon. According to the Czech Agrarian Chamber, extreme weather currently threatens around 50% of the country's agricultural land. The first harvest was around one-third lower than in the previous year, and the second harvest of hay has not even taken place in many parts of the country because the grass hasn't grown enough. As a result, farmers had to start feeding their livestock with winter reserves already in June, approximately 6 months earlier than usual, and they are worried that they will soon run out of fodder. Kamil Malat is the head of the Czech Beef Breeders Association.
We used to import fodder all the way from Poland, but this year it is nearly impossible, since there is almost nothing available. And if there is, the price is extremely high. In the past, a pack of hay would cost around 300 to 400 crowns. Today, the price has already reached 1,000 to 1,500 crowns, which is beyond breeders' means.
The worst situation is in the northwest of the country, in the Vysočina region, as well as in central and southern Moravia, where some farmers have already started getting rid of their livestock. According to the head of Agricultural Association of the Czech Republic, Martin Pícha, farmers are forced to sell their livestock prematurely and at a lower cost.
Some companies have been forced to lower the number of animals, while others will not purchase any new livestock, simply because they won't have enough fodder to feed them.
The Czech Republic, like the rest of the continent, is facing one of the most severe droughts in its history. Last week, record high temperatures were registered all around the country, reaching up to 38 degrees Celsius. Dry weather is threatening not only farm animals, but also wild animals and birds. Forest officials around the Czech Republic are supplying water to wild animals in forests to help them survive the dry spell. The drawn-out period of drought also has a dramatic impact on fish breeding, with fish suffering due to a fall in water levels and lack of oxygen in water. In reaction to the dry conditions, a severe fire warning has been issued for most parts of the country, and municipalities have introduced a ban on the use of tap water to fill swimming pools and water gardens. Regional governors and farmers have already started counting the costs of drought and are preparing to ask the state for compensation.
Ruth Frankova reporting. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. In this edition of The Arts, Ruth Frankova speaks to US-based puppeteer Vít Hožeš.
Actor and puppeteer Vít Hožeš was born in Czechoslovakia but spent most of his life in the United States, where he emigrated in his late 20s. He worked for the legendary Black Light Theatre before establishing his own Czechoslovak-American Marionette Theatre. The group, featuring puppets and live actors, performs contemporary pieces as well as plays based on traditional Czech fairy tales. When I caught up with Mr. Hožeš during his recent visit to Prague, I first asked him what made him leave his country exactly 40 years ago.
The air was just not right. I was at a theater as an actor. I had my salary and everything, but we had to do whatever the party said, and we had to do Soviet plays, and I decided to leave 6 years before that, and I just was waiting for an opportunity. I didn't have the nerve or the stomach to be a dissident, but I couldn't watch what was happening to the arts. I couldn't do what I was ordered to do, and I was really lucky enough that I left before all the signing of anti-charter and all that stuff happened.
Here in Czechoslovakia, you originally studied philosophy and French. So how did you actually get involved in theater and in puppeteering?
I was actually doing theater on the side with Mrs. Steimarová at the Lidová škola umění, the People's School of the Arts, and she arranged for me to have an audition at a theater, small theater in Moravia, and I, right after graduating in French and philosophy, I went into becoming a full-time salaried actor in Moravia.
And puppeteering?
Puppeteering, just, I played with the toy puppet theater as a child, as many Czech children did. It was my mother's toy puppet theater from 1920s. And then I abandoned it, and I thought puppet theater was dead. And just not interesting. But then I saw drag theater from Eastern Bohemia in the 1970s when they performed in Prague, a series of performances that were just a great revelation for me. And I did, with that toy theater, I did one performance of a French lesson in French in the 1970s with my friends. But in the United States, I suddenly found out they didn't know our basic Salt Over Gold or Katja and the Devil or the 12 months. And I started telling them in the United States, and then the puppet, first the devil, and then I acquired two more puppets. A witch and a princess started helping me with that.
Tell me more about the origin of the Czechoslovak American Marionette Theater. How did that begin?
Well, I had three puppets by that time, and I did storytelling with three marionettes show at Janus Church, or Jan Hus, on 74th Street, East 74th Street, in what used to be the Czech neighborhood, Czech and Slovak neighborhood, but it was disappearing even then. But I did my storytelling there, and they said, oh, we used to have a puppet theater here. And I kept asking them what happened to the puppets until they let me go to the attic, and there in an old painted chest with Moravian ornaments were these 24 large marionettes and 45 toy marionettes, like the ones I played with as a child, only slightly bigger. And then I was, at that time, I was working with the Da Fantastica Blacklight Theater with Peter Carterfield. And then when I decided to quit the Blacklight Theater just before real money came in, they just were asking for it. So we actually did Faust, the biggest hit of the traditional itinerant puppeteers, at the church, right in front of the altar.
What do you have on your repertoire today?
Well, we started with the classics like Faust or Don Juan or Genevieve at the White Doe, but I always aimed for doing the mixing of live people with marionettes or puppets, other puppets. And we eventually started doing dance, contemporary dance with marionettes like our Golem production. And then we did Hamlet, Rusalka, the Little River Maid. We had to add that subtitle because people know Dvořák's Rusalka, but they don't know what it is. And then totally contemporary plays like The Life and Times of Lee Harvey Oswald, or an adaptation of Józef Skorycki's The Bass Saxophone, an adaptation of a Polish war novel, Tadeusz Nowak, my favorite Polish writer, and other plays like that, mixing people, mixing marionettes, and mixing found objects, in whether it's a movement piece or a dance piece or whether there are dialogues.
And what about the American audience? Didn't they feel that marionettes are for children and not for adult audiences?
They do still feel that to this day. They even feel that it's only for children up to the age of 7, and that anybody after that age, children are too cool to watch puppets in general. As a matter of fact, I did a few school tours. I don't do them anymore, but the first tour was 151 performances over 3.5 months from Idaho to New Mexico, and the agent who booked that was apologizing, saying, "I booked you into a few high schools, and I'm really sorry to do that to you." And then high school students are adults, and I really started doing fairy tales for adults, so they loved it eventually. They would be unruly for a few minutes, and then they would get enchanted.
What about the typical Czech fairy tale characters such as Vodník or Čert the Devil? Do the American kids understand these figures, or do you have to kind of explain who they are?
They do, but talking about the school tour from Idaho to New Mexico, I got in trouble with the devil in the Bible Belt. Second show of the day, the principal was waiting for me on the doorsteps of his school saying, "I heard you had a devil in your show. Could you do something else? Some parents will complain." On the other hand, I traveled also to a few Indian reservations, which was a very interesting experience. They totally understood Vodník. I have to explain what the water spirit, water goblin, who he is. But at the Indian school, at the Native American school, they totally could relate to a water spirit. As a matter of fact, I had this Hopi girl come after the show, and she said, pointing at the water goblin, "Is that a Kachina?" which is a Hopi little god. They have different little spirits. And I automatically answered no, and as I said that, I realized it is. It's exactly the same thing.
What do you find so fascinating about marionettes and puppet theater? What do you think is the biggest advantage of puppets over live actors?
There's something amazing about how people really feel whatever a puppet does is much stronger. If a puppet dies, people will cry much more than if a live actor dies. So maybe the puppets are better actors. But working with puppets, I can barely imagine doing theater without puppets now, because it gives you, especially when you see the puppeteers, it gives you so many levels of working. You know, Hamlet does his monologue, and monologues are so difficult to do. They're totally unnatural. But if he does it with a puppet, it's a dialogue. It's an inner dialogue. And when there are real dialogues, then there are at least two puppeteers, two puppets, and you have so many levels how they can interact. So the array of the possibilities and of the levels that you can add to a theater performance is amazing.
You came to the Czech Republic now to receive the award given by the Czechoslovak Society for Arts and Sciences for promoting Czech culture abroad. How important is it for you receiving such an award?
It's an honor, and I think it, you know, we have our audience in the United States, but we also struggle and fight for audiences, so I think it will give us more visibility. So together with the Czech and Slovak puppetry being put on the UNESCO list of intangible world heritage treasures, or whatever they call it, 2 years ago, both of those things are good promotional tools. You know, I always talk about Kopetsky, the family, many generation of Kopetsky family, how they really were self-promoting and made themselves a legendary family that's now synonymous with Czech puppetry. But that's it. We are poor puppeteers, just like Kopetsky's were, and we need any promotion we can take, and a word will help.
Puppeteer Vít Hožeš was speaking to our own Ruth Frankova. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. And you can also contact us on Facebook or via Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. I'm Brian Kennedy. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.